Brett, describe Steven Matz in one word.
Frustrating.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I like to prove, we go down tonight.
Hello and welcome to episode 121 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of BP, and I'm joined today by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP fantasy team. Guys, what's going on?
Living life to the fullest.
Yeah, I'm getting ready for my trip to Arizona this weekend and trying to decide what games I want to watch.
Yeah, are you going to reveal your super secret plan for labor right now? Do you have any?
I don't really have a plan. It's an auction where everybody pretty much spends like value, so I have to kind of figure out like how I'm going to manage that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and you'll have your review column up shortly at BP afterwards, so very excited.
Brett and I have to discuss when that's going up, but you are right.
Yeah, I'm really excited. So, all right, we're going to talk starting pitchers on today's show. There's so much ground to cover. We got a great response on Twitter, so I want to thank everybody who sent in who they wanted us to talk about. We'll get to as many names as possible. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. You can subscribe to Baseball Prospectus. You can read all of our stuff up there right now. We're wrapping up our positional preview series. We're going to be moving more into preseason content, talking about spring training, auction, and stake draft prep. So lots of cool stuff coming in the next few weeks. So you should subscribe today. You can follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I am at George Bissell. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. We got a lot of great reviews in the last few weeks here, so I want to thank everybody for doing that, and we really appreciate it. So, gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about starting pitchers, and I guess the first place you have to go here is sort of the overall strategy, because Mike, I'll start with you. We've talked a lot about it this offseason, but how critical it is to get an ace. Can that be stated enough on in our columns at BP about how important it is to get one of these, you know, 10 to 15 guys at the top of the draft here?
Yeah, and I might even say, you know, we have about 14 names in the five-star, but you might even want to, you know, narrow that down to the top four or five, maybe six with Syndergaard. There is a difference, you know, and where the line of demarcation is, you know, Brett and I might differ slightly, but, you know, I'd say there's a difference between like John Lester and, you know, Madison Bumgarner, at the risk of stating the obvious. You know, they're both really good. You know, actually Lester had a comparable year last year, but there's kind of that trust factor there. You know, what I'm looking at when I talk about an ace, I'm looking at a guy who's going to give me, you know, 200 innings at least, you know, 240, 250 strikeouts at least, a whip around one, and an ERA below three. Like, those are the chalk numbers for me. And there aren't many guys that I look at, even if they did it last year, that I'm comfortable they're going to do it this year.
So, Brett, where's the cutoff for you? Because, like Mike mentioned, we have 13 names in our five-star tier, and all of those players are going within the first five rounds. So, where's the cutoff for you where you wouldn't feel comfortable with that starter as your number one?
I'd go down as far as probably the top 10, and I'd include John Lester in that group. I think he kind of sneaks in there for me. I think what after that, you're talking about guys that have the skill set but don't necessarily have the low-ish risk for a pitcher that you're looking for. you know, specifically, I'm sure we'll talk about the last three guys in the five star tier on the column, but that's sort of where I'm drawing the line. That you know, I want an ace that, if I'm going to take an ace, I want an ace that I am confident can stay healthy, at least relatively. You know, and obviously they're all pitchers, but you know, there are certain players with much longer injury lists than others.
Yeah, so if you're following along, you can check out our tiered rankings, which are up at Baseball Prospectus right now. Mike wrote those up, and our whole staff contributed to those. So the five-star tier, like you said, Brett, I mean, all pitchers are risky, but I think one of the points that I know Mike has made this point, and some of our other fantasy staff members as well, but, and I had it in the state of the position, that one of the biggest things that's changed over the last few seasons is starting pitcher workloads. We only had 15 starters throw 200 innings or more last season. That's down from 28 the previous year. And, you know, 10 years ago, we had as many as 38 starters doing that. So there just aren't a ton of guys getting enough volume in terms of innings to build up those strikeout totals to offset weaker ratios. And that's helped separate that tier of aces from the rest of the starters even more. So, I have some serious questions about some of the guys in the five-star tier, but we'll get to them in a minute. Mike, Clayton Kershaw, he still returned elite value last year despite missing 2 months. Are you at all concerned about the back injury? Is that a long-term concern for you, or is he still safe as a first-round pick this year?
I mean, I'm somewhat concerned. Anytime there's a back injury, well, I mean, really any pitching injury, unless it's like an oblique or a hamstring or something like that, I'm concerned. What I'm looking at with Kershaw, though, is, you know, so last year 149 innings, and he put up those elite numbers. If he puts up 170, 180 innings, you know you're going to get, you know, like a 2-1. You're going to whip all under one. You get strikeouts well over, you know, a batter per nine. That's kind of the thing with Kershaw. Like, there's a little worry because the downside with him isn't performance. It's that he goes out and tweaks the back or has some other injury and throws 80 innings, in which case you've got a problem at that draft position. But, you know, on some level, and I'm not saying it's a cop-out, any player has an injury risk that where an injury could just, you know, crop up and they can miss a big chunk of the season. You know, we've seen other guys in the first round do it before. So I'm concerned, but I'd say, you know, if I had to rate it from zero being like no concern at all to 100 being, you know, this giant red flag, don't draft him, it's probably a 20.
Is it important to remember, though, that even if Kershaw misses time, he's so good that he's still going to return that value as one of the top pitchers in fantasy regardless?
Yeah, it's very important. Like, even in an NL only where you lose out because the guy replacing him is going to stink or be bottom of the barrel, Kershaw is so good that you can attach a replacement level player, like even in an only, to him for like 60, 70 innings and still get some pretty good production. And in a mixed league, that production is going to be much higher level, obviously.
Yeah, Brett, do you agree with that on Kershaw, that he's, you know, a lock for the first round and still the best pitcher on the planet?
Yeah, I mean, of all years, this is the year that I finally moved Kershaw up in my redraft rankings. I'd be comfortable taking him as early as third overall. He's, you know, the pitching landscape has gotten slightly better, but it's really more about the pitching landscape around him that's changed. He just has, he really is able to provide, you know, elite value because of the type of pitcher he is in this environment, as opposed to, you know, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely, and that's something I touched on in the state of the position, that there's a little bit of the availability heuristic going on here where you can remember some of the more prominent busts at the position from last year. You know, I'm thinking of your Sonny Grays, Dallas Keuchel, those kinds of guys who didn't live up to their early round draft position, and they're just more busts later on. So if you pass on one of these 10 to 12 guys that we're talking about, you're really putting yourself at risk. And I know this is, Mike, something you've talked about a lot too, that, you know, there's just less risk overall, though, when you look at these top tier starters. And one of the guys, I think, Brett, I'll stay with you for this one, Max Scherzer. One of the more interesting storylines this spring, he has a stress fracture in his finger. Say that five times fast. And according to the Washington Post, he can throw a breaking ball without issues, but he's using a modified grip right now with three fingers instead of two to throw his fastball. He's throwing bullpens this way, and I don't know what to make of this injury. How serious is this, and are you at all concerned about Max Scherzer going into the year already with a problem?
I'm not all that concerned right now, but I retain the right to become concerned in another 2 weeks if there are still whispers about this going along. I really wouldn't rush to downgrade him any more than, you know, a dollar or two if you wanted to get conservative. But you know, he's still an impact starter. The strikeouts are just so good. I don't see any reason to be super concerned at this point.
A lot of his value too is tied up in the innings. I mean, so that's maybe the only area, like you said, I'd be concerned. If he was actually going to miss starts at any point because of it, then I would start to get worried. But that's not
the case at this point. So
right, something to monitor at least. I like to overreact, so you know, bear with me. Let's talk about those three guys at the bottom of the tier, because I think they're interesting in terms of how they ended up here. I'll start with you, Darvish, Mike. What are the big concerns with him? Because obviously coming off Tommy John last year, the skills were great, with some of the best command we've seen from him. Still was striking guys out. He looks good. I mean, is it really just that simple that he could break at any time? Is that the biggest concern with Darvish? Or is it we don't know whether or not he can get to 200 innings? What's the biggest concern?
It's more the second thing. I don't necessarily think he can break at any time. It's more a matter of he's missed time here, he's missed time there. He obviously had the Tommy John. And, you know, it's not Kershaw where, you know, if you get 160, 170 innings, you're like, they're great innings. You know, you can see the numbers that he had last year. He put up a 3.41 and a 1.12. You know, obviously the strikeouts were tremendous. You know, some of it is just that Arlington factor. We see this, and maybe we'll get into this into the next tier with Cole Hamels. Mm-hmm. Like, these are great pitchers, you know, pitching in a park. You know, it's not Coors, but it does impact them, and it does put them at a disadvantage. So Darvish is a guy I feel pretty safe saying he could put up elite strikeout numbers like Scherzer. He's not going to put up the innings that a healthy Scherzer would. You know, like, if you look at a ceiling for Darvish on innings, what are you thinking? Are you thinking 200? That's probably the top of where I think he'd go. Like, 180 or 190 seems more reasonable. And then because of that Arlington factor, you know, do you put a 3 on the ceiling for the ERA? Like, that feels realistic too. So,
oops, sorry, just as far as the innings go, he had 100 last year. Pecota has him for 175. So, like, I wouldn't project more than 180, right?
Yeah, 174, 175 is a kind of that Pecota, like, safe number for a lot of pitchers. Like, mm-hmm. Cueto, I believe, was at 174.
You don't really see Pecota projecting from much more than that from a lot of people. Yeah, the thing with Darvish, though, is that, you know, he's not a young guy, and he pitched 100 innings last year coming off Tommy John. I mean, to me, if Darvish is healthy, I do think he gets to 200 innings. I don't think they're going to ease off of him. I think they're going to be competing, and I think he's got the build to hold up well, and I think he's beyond sort of the. He's beyond sort of the scope of youth, where you're really concerned about how many innings these guys are throwing coming off of surgery. I mean, Adam Wainwright, when he came off of Tommy John surgery, his first year back, threw almost 200 innings, and he didn't get any. He was 30. Darvish is what, 28?
30.
Yeah.
30.
Yeah.
The only thing I'll say about that, I do agree with you, Brett, from the standpoint that they're not going to ease up on him. But one of the reasons we're not seeing pitchers, you know, to your point earlier, George, go 200 or well over 200, teams in playoff position, they ease up in September. Like, you start to see six-man rotations. You start to see starts skipped.
Yeah.
And the reason you see that is they're looking playoffs. Like, you know, look at the Cubs, for example. Jake Arrieta last year, regular season, 197 and a third. John Lester, 202 and two-thirds. Kyle Hendricks, 190. These were pitchers who were healthy last year. And, you know, there's not really a significant injury history with any of those guys. But the Cubs looked at it like, well, you know, yeah, we could go 220, 230, but there's a cost to that. That's kind of more what I see with Darvish. I don't think they're going to ease up on him. I worry in September, if the Rangers are up and they have a lead and they're going to make the playoffs, that they look at it like, yeah, you know, you're healthy, but we need you in October. We don't need you in September.
Yeah, the other variable here is that it's the final year of his contract with the Rangers too, so there's not a whole lot of incentive to hold him back. At least early on in the year, you know, they want as many innings as they can get out of him, I think, because they don't have a ton of depth either in that rotation. So, all right, let's move on to the two guys at the bottom of the tier. And I guess, Brett, my big question here is Carlos Carrasco and Steven Strasburg, are we sure they're going to stay healthy, and do they belong in this five-star tier?
Personally, my answer to both is probably no. I like both of them, but the, you know, the comfort level to have them be a five-star guy, just, I guess it's sort of unfair. You know, I get the argument for having them in the five-star tier because of how the tiers work, but I wouldn't want to have one of them as my ace, I guess, if that makes sense, if I can draw that distinction.
Yeah, exactly.
There's too much history of not enough innings. I mean, Carlos Carrasco has been really good when he's been healthy, but he's thrown more than 150 innings exactly once in his career. And Strasburg has done it three times, but hasn't done it since 2014. He's thrown more. Well, he did have one season where he threw over 200 innings, but he has two seasons of 160 innings, and you know, it's all cherry picking numbers. But you're not getting 200 innings out of these guys unless you're the one kind of. unless you're the one, you know, sitting at the end of the game of musical chairs.
Yeah. Mike, did you have something to add?
There is, we can move off this after this. The difference between Carrasco and Strasburg. Strasburg is somebody I do look at as, I don't want to say injury prone, but I don't trust him because of the injuries. Carrasco's had a couple of freak injuries, including, you know, a base running injury last year. So I do hear what you're saying, Brett. I don't necessarily trust him for those 200 innings, but in terms of his arm and in terms of the health of that, I think he's safe as far as that goes. You know, and this is one of those philosophical conversations of how much do you believe in the injury prone argument versus, you know, somebody just happening to get hurt. Like this is the Giancarlo Stanton argument of like, well, is Giancarlo mm-hmm. Stanton just always going to get hurt, or is it just, you know, bad luck? He got hit by a pitch. You know, he had a groin injury. He had this injury. I don't know what the answer is. Like 3 or 4 years ago, Matt Kemp was a guy everybody said, oh, he's injury prone. He'll never stay healthy. You know, and now he's played 150 games a year for the last 3 years. And I know hitters and pitchers, apples and oranges, but I have a little more faith in Carrasco than you do, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, like skills-wise, there's not a lot of questions about Carrasco. He struck out over a batter per inning and had a DRA under 3 in each of the last 3 years. The issue, though, is innings. I mean, can you count on the volume? And we actually got that question on Twitter from Robert Leahy at Duval State of Mind. He asked whether or not Carrasco's injuries in the fact that they're not pitching-related in a lot of cases, they're kind of fluky in nature, if there's a good chance that he does stay healthy. So do you buy that narrative a little bit that, you know, maybe if he can avoid some of the, you know, walking under ladders kind of stuff that's happened to him, it all comes together?
Well, put it this way, you know, to Brett's point, and this is where the tiers are kind of squishy. I don't trust Carrasco more than anybody ranked above him in this tier, which is why he's sitting where he's sitting. But there is a difference to me between Carrasco and, say, Cole Hamels. I would rather have, you know, Brett, I know you took Hamels in labor and maybe you disagree, but I'd rather have Carrasco thinking I'm going to get 170 innings out of him than 200 innings of Hamels.
No, I completely agree. And I think Carrasco went two rounds before, before Hamels. But yeah, I mean, at that point you're talking about, I mean, he would have been, if I had taken Carrasco, he would have been my second starter, and that he would make for an awesome second starter, because that's exactly what you want. You want a guy who has the potential to be an ace. And someone with that skill set is perfect. But yeah, it's, you know, yes, the injury-prone stuff is a little bit more intensified when you have someone who tends to deal with soft tissue stuff. But, you know, injury-prone guys tend to be injury-prone, and that has to get factored in. I mean, it's not like we're talking about someone who, you know, with Carrasco, it's not even like we're talking about someone who has like one 200 inning season under his belt, where he's, you know, he's really hung in there and he's thrown a full season and been at that level of performance. We haven't seen that from him. You at least make the argument we've seen that from Strasburg, even though his elbow scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, that's totally fair. All right, so to transition more towards the four-star tier, I think we've done enough Carrasco talk for one episode. We got a question from Rob Silver, at Rob Silver. He wants to know about the Cubs' big three. Do you feel good about drafts if you have one of those three as an ace? And why does it feel risky if your ace is Jake Arrieta, John Lester, or Kyle Hendricks? I don't know, Brett, if you agree with him on Arrieta or Lester, but maybe Hendricks a little bit. What's your sense of the Cubs rotation and those big three guys? Because we have the first two in the five-star tier, and then Hendricks is leading off the four-star tier, one of 14 names in that tier.
Yeah. Here's a weird thing. Would I feel super comfortable with Hendricks as my ace? No, unless I was going with some sort of strategy where I had a really killer offense. But I'd be more comfortable with Kyle Hendricks as my ace than either Carrasco or Strasburg, if that makes any sense.
It's bold, but I like it.
It's not that I would take Hendricks first, but when you take that first starting pitcher, I want that starting pitcher to be someone who I trust to pitch. And Hendricks, you know, I believe in the skill set and I trust him to pitch. I don't know that the strikeouts are going to be there for him to, you know, and that's sort of the reason why he's in the four-star tier, but, you know, I think he's pretty safe to return, SP2 value. And, you know, there's a lot of value in that kind of safety.
Mike, do you agree with that on the Cubs rotation? What's your take on those three guys?
This is my take. All three of them, there's safety in the kinds of aces that they are because of that defense behind them, which, you know, as I think Matthew Trueblood at Baseball Prospectus wrote about, it was an historically good or great defense. So the floor with all of them is not that low. That there's safety in their health, as I talked about before. The thing about them as aces, with the exception of Arrieta, if he can bounce back to what he did in 2015, if he can get the command, you know, back, you know, where it was, it's a ceiling with Lester and Hendricks. Like, they're fine, but when you look at some of the guys in the five-star tier, like, Lester's kind of an example of someone in the five-star tier. He has... I would say arguably the lowest ceiling of anyone in that tier. So he's fine. You know, he's a reliable pitcher. You know, it's 200 innings. It's close to a strikeout an inning. You know, it's that great whip. It's that solid ERA. But of all the pitchers there, and this includes Carrasco and Strasburg, quite honestly, I don't have that feeling that Lester's going to put up, you know, that year where you're like, oh my God, he's... you know, a top five guy overall. You know, he did what Scherzer or Bumgarner did. I'm not saying Carrasco or Strasburg will do that. I'm saying that if there's like a 2 or 3% chance that a pitcher can do that and break through, Lester's just not that guy. And, you know, Hendricks is the same thing. Like Hendricks, he's a solid pitcher. You know, he'll slip a little bit. You know, I think he'll put up something closer to a 3 than a 2-1-3. But again, you know, he's just not that guy to me who's that ace that you think of, okay, he's a top 5 guy. But yeah, he's an ace from the standpoint that he's going to be a top 10, top 15 guy. So, you know, to answer your question, Rob, a lot of this comes back to how you define an ace.
Yeah, like for me, the floor with those guys is a top 20 starter. Like I can't envision a scenario in which, you know, barring injury, which can happen to anybody, but, you know, I can't see them falling outside of the top 20 guys on this list right now. So
I would say to Rob, you know, Rob's an NFBC champion.
Yeah.
You know, there's safety in a format like that where you can't trade and where it's a deep reserve and it's tough sledding as far as pickups. There's more safety in a guy like in any of those Cubs guys than, say, in a guy like Carrasco or Strasburg, where in that format, I'd definitely rather have any of those Cubs starters.
Brett, what is it that keeps Justin Verlander out of the 5-star tier? Because he's really been good the last 2 years.
Not much. I mean,
I don't know.
He's excellent. He is entering that phase of his career where, you know, this is really the second. This is his second act. You know, he kind of went through that little transition period when he was figuring out how to pitch with slightly diminished stuff, and you know, it's a very common transition period for starters. But he's been excellent. You know, the defense in Detroit worries me a little bit, just because I think, you know, it's rough in multiple places, but, you know, Verlander is someone who, you know, I'm not really concerned about for 2017 in terms of expectation. I think if you value him around where Lester and Price are, I totally get it. I just think I think the defense lets him down a little bit.
Yeah, for what it's worth, Verlander's being drafted in the third round right now, pick 42 on the NFBC ADP so far this year. Mike, Chris Archer, he has an interesting profile, I would say, because the strikeouts were still there last year, but obviously he 200 innings, but he only had 9 wins, and his ERA was over 4, but his DRA was 3.35. It seems to me like Archer, the skills are still intact. He just was not getting the results for whatever reason last year. We have him right at the top of the 4-star tier. How confident are you in Chris Archer for this season?
I'm pretty confident, and, you know, he's somebody who, you know, to your point, could slip into the 5-star tier quite easily, and I'd feel better if I knew that Kevin Kiermaier was going to get a full season of games behind Chris Archer. I mean, this is really true for any Tampa pitcher, just because, you know, Kiermaier's so good defensively. But yeah, Archer had some bad luck with BABIP. I mean, he did struggle a little bit in the first half. I know he was having trouble locating his slider and with some of the movement. He's just a pitcher that when he's on, you know, if you can get a full season of Archer at his best, he could slot into that 5-star easily. And truthfully, between Archer and Verlander, because of the strikeouts, I'd probably lean Archer.
He gave up 30 home runs last year, which is a little bit of a concern, but if he can kind of pull us back a little bit. I mean, it's a great park to pitch in, too. So
Kiermaier's good, but he's not that good. Well, the other side of it is that the road, you know, the road venues in the AL East are what kind of hurt Archer. You know, you
got
to go to Toronto, you got to go to Boston, you got to go to, you know, Yankee Stadium, you got to go to Camden. Like, that's 36 games. You know, divide that by 5, you do the math. That's a little bit rougher for Archer than, say, a pitcher in another division.
Yeah. Brett, Cole Hamels, it seems to me like you end up with him on every team you drafted this year. What is it about Cole Hamels? Is it just where he's going? He kind of fits with how you're drafting? Because right now he's going about 82nd. It's just kind of low. Is it just the fact that he's kind of slipped a little bit in where he's going this year and that works out for you? Or what is it about Cole Hamels that you like?
Yeah, I think he's slipped a little bit, and And, you know, obviously the whip took a little bit of a tick up. You know, he walked a few more guys than he usually does. I'm not convinced that's a permanent feature in his repertoire. But, you know, even with that, he had a strikeout an inning. He's going to win games in Texas. He's going to pitch. I think that the ratios are what scare people a little bit. But, you know, I feel like, you know, Hamels is one of those guys that will continue to pitch well throughout his 30s. So, even if he doesn't quite strike out a batter an inning this year, which then that could potentially tick down, I don't see him walking batters at that rate again. And I do see him as a really solid second starter in pretty much every format.
Yeah, we got a bunch of questions about Gerrit Cole. People want us to discuss him. And what's fascinating to me is how good Gerrit Cole was 2 years ago. And then last year just was one of the more prominent busts. Mike, what are your expectations for Gerrit Cole this season? Because I'm not sure how much of his performance last year was related to the injury or what to expect from him right now, because we put him right in the middle of this four-star tier. So we have him ranked as a top 20 starter going into the year. Do you think he finishes the year there?
I honestly feel like this is almost a, and this happens a lot with pitcher rankings, I don't want to say it's a cop-out, but it's a like happy medium between what he you know could be as a ceiling, which is a top 10 guy, and what might happen the other way, which is, you know, only top 30. You know, we Brett and I enjoyed that success in labor 2 years ago, and last year Cole pretty early on just didn't look the same. Mm-hmm. Like he just didn't have as much bite on his pitches. The velocity at times was not quite there, but it wasn't even so much velocity. It was the fact that Cole in 2015, he'd throw some pitches that just exploded, and you could see hitters just not even being able to cope. Last year, he didn't have that movement, and he was more hittable. So if he's healthy, if he's on, and if he can get that repeatability, we know what he can do. We know he can be an elite pitcher, but I kind of want to see it. You know, he's had a history, you know, outside of 2015, and we talked about this with Carrasco, you know, outside of 2015, he's just had a history where he has not been able to stay healthy. And unlike Carrasco, a lot of it has been arm related, which is not a positive, obviously.
Yeah, it's always a little bit concerning. He had a tricep strain, a bunch of stuff last year, eventually got shut down when he tried to come back. Brett, who's the better bounce back for you, Gerrit Cole or Jacob DeGrom in this tier?
I am a big Jacob DeGrom proponent. I think that, you know, he had the injury issue at the end of last year, but before those last couple of starts, he was a, you know, a top five pitcher, and there's no real reason from a skill perspective that I think he's going to drop off. I think he can do the exact same thing that Carlos Carrasco can do. And you can argue which one has the greater risk, but in terms of per pitch performance, I think DeGrom is a really good bounce back pick for 2017.
All right, I want to close out these first two tiers by asking, I'll start with you, Mike. Is there anyone we haven't talked about in this tier that you think we should? That's interesting. That we haven't touched on yet.
There's still a lot of pitchers here who are interesting, but I don't even know where to begin. The two Dodger pitchers, you know, Kenta Maeda and Rich Hill, and I talked about this a little bit in the article. You know, Maeda, apparently this offseason, and I found this out after, you know, I wrote the article, he had been working on conditioning, and there's some talk he could get to 200 innings. And if he can do that with everything else that he has going for him, you really want to move him up, and that's just something you kind of want to watch. Rich Hill's the opposite. You know Rich Hill is not going to give you more than, you know, I'd say 130, 140 innings, and that might be generous. But he's just so good when he's out there that you have to kind of rate him here. And that was something the staff had done where I had him at the top of the 3-star and a number of people wanted to push him up. I'm fine with that, but it's very format dependent. In a deeper league, there's a cost. We talk about this with Kershaw. There's a cost to having Rich Hill, you know, as your number two in an NL only or a really deep mixed league. In a 12-team mix, so having Rich Hill is great because you can slot him in for the starts he gets and just not worry so much about the ones he doesn't.
See, this is why I loved Rich Hill last year, because you could get him outside like the top 200 picks. I mean, now he's going 128th overall, so you're looking at a pretty early pick on him, and that's just not ideal, considering there's not a ton of innings upside there. Brett, who's the guy for you that we haven't talked about yet that you want to highlight?
I was going to say Hill, but I won't jump back in there. So honestly, we could talk about some of these other guys, but they're not all that exciting. I still really like Carlos Martinez, but his whip keeps him in this range as opposed to getting him closer to ace status.
Yep. All right. So the 3-star tier, this is where it starts to get really interesting, because right at the top of the tier, there's 28 names here. So if you're following along in the article, you can scroll through the giant list, and we're going to try and lightning round as many as we can here coming up. But right at the top of the tier, you know, you have a pair of pitchers who are trending in sort of opposite directions in Danny Duffy and Felix Hernandez. And I'll start with Duffy, Brett. He made 26 starts last year, 3.51 ERA with 188 strikeouts and 179 innings, only 42 walks all year. And Danny Duffy was tremendous. Is it the fact that we've only seen one season from him that keeps him from being even higher in the rankings, or is it another factor that I'm not considering?
No, I think it's a lack of track record mostly. Duffy has the pedigree. You know, he's been a high end prospect. He's done the solid reliever route. He's done a lot, but you know, the most concerning thing in the profile, obviously, is the home runs. I think, you know, you start pitching in the zone a little bit more, and this is kind of what you get, especially with the types of hitters that that make up lineups today, where, you know, he was able to keep the walks down, but and he was able to tick the strikeouts up, but the downside is that when he missed in the zone. I mean, he threw 50% of his pitches in the zone, which is the highest rate of his career. He threw 62% of his first pitches in the zone, which was by far the highest rate of his career. And while people were swinging and missing more, they were swinging more often. So when he was missing his spots, they would often get squared up pretty good. If he continues that walk rate, he can sort of limit how disturbing that home run rate can be. But you know, with the strikeouts and with the you know, the underrated thing about Duffy is that when he's not walking people, he's going deep into games a lot. He could easily throw 205, 210 innings if he pitches a full season this year because of that ability. He's in this range because there are red flags in the profile, and also because Kansas City is just probably not going to offer him as much win potential as some of the teams on the players around him.
Yep, Mike, Felix Hernandez, he turned 30 years old. His fastball velocity is down to 91 miles an hour. Had the highest ERA of his career last year, 3.78. He's going in the 10th round right now. I just consistently look at Hernandez and I go, he's a guy who's getting inflated because of the name value. Everybody recognizes him, but I think the more savvy fantasy owners have soured a little bit on Hernandez. Is there anything to like here? Because I don't really see it anymore with Felix. It pains me to say that too.
I'm in the same. I agree with you. If there's anything to like, you know, he's got an improved defense behind him, which will help. Although, as Brett keeps pointing out about Seattle, it's not the pitcher's park that people think it is, or some people think it is. And yeah, that's kind of what it is with Felix. And we've seen this with great pitchers. You know, you go back to Pedro Martinez. You know, he lost velocity, particularly after, you know, he got injured and had surgery. But the difference there is, you know, Pedro threw like four or five pitches four or five different ways, and until the very end kept hitters off balance. Felix is pretty good at that, but he just isn't at that same level, which isn't a knock on Felix. It's just like, who is at that level? So that's where it's really tough. It's just hard to see Felix doing better than, you know, say a 3-4 or a 3-5 with a decent whip, you know, perhaps, and just not nearly as many strikeouts. Like, you know, you kind of pointed out, like, I'm already throwing all these caveats in there. There's just too much going on with him to really be too confident in him doing much more than, say, skimming the bottom of the four-star tier.
Right. Like, I brought up the fastball velocity because his most effective pitch is the changeup. And just there's not a ton of differential. A changeup's more effective when you have a wider gap. If you're throwing 95 and then your changeup's 88, that's great. But when you're 91 and then 88, it's not as effective. You're not going to get as many swings and misses. So that's my concern with Hernandez. Another guy, Brett, who disappointed last year, Dallas Keuchel. He just I don't quite know what to make of him anymore at this point. What should we make of Dallas Keuchel?
He's really more, he's turned back into sort of a mid-round flyer. There's always a chance he could reestablish some of that value that he had in previous years, but I don't feel particularly optimistic that he's going to return to, you know, the really great form he had 2 years ago. And the problem is that if he's not that, his room for error is so small that, you know, he's either going to be an SP2 or like an SP5 or 6. I don't really see much middle ground for him, which makes him kind of a dangerous guy to take unless he's falling in drafts, which he very well might be.
All right, the last guy I want to ask you guys about, and then I'll open it up to who you like the most, is Sean Manaea, because every time I look at him, I like him even more. His final 16 appearances, he made 15 starts from June 29th on. He had 95 and a third innings, a 2.74 ERA with 84 strikeouts and only 21 walks. I love the ballpark. I think it's a great environment to pitch in, obviously. Mike, talk me out of Sean Manaea, because I think he's going to be really good if he stays healthy.
No.
I can do it because I like Manaea, and I think I'm a little bit higher on him than some people, but I'm not as enthused as Brett. So, you know, the knocks on Manaea are that the fastball is not as, you know, it's not an elite pitch, and he was kind of pedestrian overall against, you know, against righties. So you kind of have that with him. You know, great park, you know, obviously improving pitcher. I love the off-speed stuff. I feel like he's okay in this tier, and there's some room for improvement. You know, if I'm talking out of him, I'm talking out of him from the standpoint that I don't see as much to build on as some people do. I think he'll be fine, and he'll be very good, and you know, Oakland helps him. I don't see what some of the dynasty people see in too much more than that.
I will take some umbrage to the fastball comment, because if you look at just the velocity or the movement, it just looks like a good fastball. But his deception, especially against lefties, is pretty intense, and you know,
well, I would agree against lefties. Against lefties, he's very difficult to hit.
Yeah, but the deception doesn't sort of, it doesn't limit itself to lefties. I mean, he's just the kind of guy who is difficult to pick the ball up from, and I think it's gonna continue to make his stuff play up, and I think it's gonna add to his strikeout numbers. But yeah, I'm a big supporter of Manaea. I don't think he's ever going to be a fantasy ace, but right. I think there's a pretty good chance he can settle in as a top, you know, 30 starter for a while.
I mean, the red flags I'll just bring up about him, you know, to that point are, you know, 17 home runs against righties in 116 innings and an ERA of almost 5 on the road. You know, can he get better? Yes, but I do see some red flags there. And again, they, don't get me wrong, I think Manaea is okay here, and there's a little more ceiling in him than this 3-star tier. I just don't see him climbing too far out of it.
His second half was really, really good, and he's going in the 12th round. And to make my point, Mike, I guess I'll read you some of the names that are going near him in NFBC ADP, and you tell me if you'd rather have Manaea or these guys going within 10 to 15 picks. Matt Moore.
I'd rather have Manaea.
Lance McCullers.
I don't like McCullers at all. We can get into that later, but...
James Paxton, who I kind of like a lot.
I don't like Paxton either, so really, you know, for me, it's the health of Paxton. The stuff's great. I just don't ever see him staying healthy.
Yeah, I mean, Manaea as a prospect had a lot of injury issues, but he was relatively healthy.
He was pretty durable. Yeah. He was pretty durable.
Yeah, but that kind of, you know, like Brett and I are talking about, the names in this tier where he's being drafted are not that exciting. He's going after...
Right. From that standpoint, you know, again, I guess what you had asked for a devil's advocate argument against Manaea.
It was good.
The argument to me is more I don't see as much of the ceiling as Brett does, which means he's fine where he's being drafted, and I'll probably own him in a couple leagues this year.
Yeah. All right. Hey, you kind of teased it on James Paxton, so I can't let that sit there. What are your issues with Paxton? Because I know he's another guy Brett and I like in this tier.
It's all injury. He just can't stay healthy. And you know, I think it was, you know, I read a piece by, it was Jeff Sullivan. It was actually over Fangraphs. It was a piece about Daniel Norris, but he talked about Paxton and how, you know, great the movement is and how great the, you know, how hitters just can't pick him up. You know, James Paxton is 28 years old. You know, we talked about Carrasco. You know, Paxton just has never pitched more than 121 innings in a season. He just always gets hurt. It's always something. If he stays healthy, yes, he could be, heck, he could be a 5-star pitcher. I just don't see it happening.
Brett, he also points to the sky on every fly ball, and it makes the watchability factor very high.
that is true.
I've said this before, and maybe I've said this on this podcast. I want to see a pitcher point to the ground when there's like a home run and like blame, you know, Satan.
He'd like be pointed to the sky and it'd be a home run, and you'd be like, yes, James, it's out of here. You got it.
That works too.
Yeah. All right. Wait, there is one other guy. Actually, I lied earlier. We got a ton of requests to talk about Carlos Rodon, so I'll throw this one over to you, Brett. I mean, because he's going after guys like Paxton, McCullers, Manaea, J-Hap, I mean, Vince Velasquez. Rodon is good, right?
Yeah.
Why is he going so late then? I don't understand. He's going in like the 12th, 13th round. What am I missing here? Or what are people missing?
He's good, but you're sort of banking on progression or a small sample size, which is certainly something I like to do in the area that he's being taken in. But, you know, I don't think he's a slam dunk to go higher than that. I think the White Sox are gonna have probably a pretty bad defense.
Yeah.
And they're not going to win very many games. It's still not a great place to pitch. And, you know, the people that are kind of pointing to the last 2 months of his season, you know, there were some big strikeout games against some not so great teams in September. So it's there are not as many positives to draft on as I think we could have seen from Rodon. That said, I really do like him long term, and I think one of these years he's going to really put it together, and he's going to strike out over. Yeah. He's going to strike out over 200. Maybe I could see him being a 215 to 220 strikeout guy. The ratios may never quite be elite, but there's a lot here. I just don't know that we're going to see it in 2017.
All right, so we're going to lightning round the rest of these names in the three-star tier. There's just so many names. So, Mike, I'll start with you. Marcus Stroman, first half, 108 innings, a 5 ERA. Second half, 96 innings with a 3.56 and 89 strikeouts. Which is the real Marcus Stroman?
I'd say it's closer to the second half. He's a really good pitcher. He had just said I think it was a week ago that he had a knee issue, and now he said he feels 100%, and he said he thinks he can throw 240 innings. That's generous for any pitcher in this day and age, but if the knee's healthy, I think he's a pretty reliable guy, and that's why he's in this tier.
To his credit, he was one of those 14 guys to have 200 innings last year.
200 is fine. 240 is just, there isn't a team that's going to let anybody, outside of a healthy Scherzer even attempt that.
Yeah. Brett, Jameson Taillon is a top 40 mixed league starter this year. True or false?
I'm going to say false, but close.
Very nice. I like Jameson Taillon. He's Canadian as well. He's not. He was fun to talk to. Mike, Aaron Sanchez or Michael Fulmer?
You put me on the spot, but I think I want Sanchez.
That's what we do. We put you both on the hot seat for this. Jeff Samardzija, Brett, ERA over or under 4?
Under, but almost exclusively because of the ballpark.
He is strange, and I don't like that he's not striking out a ton of people. It's not that appealing to me. Mike, more innings pitched this season, Aaron Nola or Vince Velasquez?
Oh, a Phillies question.
I did some prep work today.
I'll say Velasquez just because, well, put it this way, Nola, if he holds up, it's going to be Nola, but there's just so many questions to me about, what a healthy Nola season is going to look like. And the other part of that is the Phillies are going to be cautious with both of them. But since they don't expect to compete this year, I'd imagine they're going to be even more cautious with Nola.
Brett, let's say everything broke right for Kevin Gausman this year. What does the ceiling look like for you? Is he a 4-star guy or better?
No, 4-star. I don't see him. I don't see him with the upside to be a 5-star guy.
Okay, choose one, Mike: Jared Eichhoff, your boy, or Tanner Roark.
I'm going to take Eichhoff, even though I know from a wins perspective that that's a loss. I really like Jared Eichhoff.
Yeah, we have them back-to-back in our rankings. Lance McCullers, we already kind of did that one. Brett, describe Steven Matz in one word. you can't use broken either.
Frustrating.
What's your confidence level in him getting to 150 innings this year?
Not high.
Okay.
I love Steven Matz, but not high.
Love the talent. He's been hurt forever. Even in as a prospect, he was never healthy. Even 2015, when he pitched a lot, he was hurt every now and then. Mike, Robbie Ray sucks. Yes or no?
Well, he doesn't suck, but I don't think that he's... Anyone who strikes out as many guys as he did doesn't suck, but I don't necessarily see the... some people are all over him. I just don't see that.
All right, I was
but
trying
to answer your question, no, he doesn't suck.
All right, I was trying to be bold. Here's my thing. We talked about this via text, that DRA has a tendency to overrate... I wouldn't say... I don't know if overrate's the right word, but it doesn't properly account for guys who generate a lot of swinging strikes and record strikeouts, but also
It's a Michael Pineda effect.
Yeah, guys who make a lot of mistakes and give up hard contact and home runs. I know that's something that I believe they're working on in the modeling, but
I think they are.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that shakes out, because Ray is definitely one of those guys. He's talked a lot about how he wants to clean up the mistakes too in the spring. So I'm intrigued by Robbie Ray, but I also don't want to be relying on him to like be a guy for me.
Ray, from what I've seen in the mocks and the drafts and auctions I've done, I kind of like him a little bit, but he's the guy somebody's going to like more and is just going to push to a price where you're like, yeah, there's just other guys in this tier. I'll take over him.
Yeah. Brett, Sonny Gray is Sonny Gray good this year?
Good? Yeah, I think so. I think he's good.
What does that mean? Is he more towards the top of this tier? We have him at the very bottom. Do you think he finishes the year more towards the top of the three-star tier or the bottom?
More towards the bottom, but I don't think he stinks.
Okay, that's fair. I don't think he does either, but definitely last year was not encouraging. All right, last name I want to touch on the three-star tier is Julio Urias, because last year in his final 9 games, 36 innings, but he had a sub-2 ERA with 36 strikeouts and 36 innings. So I love Julio Urias, but he's like Rich Hill. You can't count on the innings this year, but I think he's crazy good. All right, 2-star tier. There's only one guy I want to ask you guys about, and that is the man that the internet is finally discovering, it looks like, in the last few weeks here, Robert Gesellman, who we've talked a lot about. But Brett, make the case for me, because I'll do it if you won't, that Robert Gesellman is the most intriguing name in this 2-star tier, which is 21 names.
I think that's fair. I think he is, if not the most, one of the, you know, three most intriguing names in this tier. You know, the stuff, the tick up and stuff is very real, and there are questions about whether, you know, there isn't questions about whether there's going to be room for him, because we know someone's going to get hurt in the Mets rotation, even if for some reason he doesn't start the year in the rotation, which would really surprise me. But, you know, it also might be him, because he's a Mets pitcher. There's always hesitancy with guys that take steps forward like this, but now we've seen it at the major league level for, you know, 40 something innings, and I really do think that if he even gets, you know, 150 to 160 innings, I think he'll perform like a 3-star pitcher with the upside of a 4-star pitcher.
Yeah, like we had Jeff Paternostra on this show about a month ago, and he talked about how Gesellman was throwing 95 in the major leagues with a really good slider and multiple other pitches. Like he looks really good at the major league level and was succeeding, like you said. So you can't discount that, and I think that matters. And he's going to get a shot here. Mike, who's the guy in this tier that you like? Because we're kind of running late on time here. So who's a name in this tier that you like to target in drafts this year?
I mentioned him before, but Daniel Norris. You know, he has a pedigree. His injury was not an arm injury. You know, he also separately battled and beat thyroid cancer. And if you just look at what he did last year, I know he struggled a little bit like Danny Duffy did down the stretch, but there's some elite markers with him, and, you know, just nobody is even talking about him. And it's kind of similar to Gesellman, where, you know, a lot of potential there and could be better than many of the pitchers in the 3-star tier. And, you know, he could be a 2 behind Verlander, but no one's even talking about Norris as a valid option. And I think he'll exceed his ADP quite easily.
He's one of those guys where he doesn't need great control to be effective. Like, he's still going to strike people out and be okay. So the control doesn't worry me as much with him.
But even then, if you look at the walks, like, you know, he's for guys who, you know, he better control, or I should say better walks per 9 than Urias, better walks per 9, way better than McCullers. and those guys are just being drafted, and they have higher ceilings, I get it, but they're being drafted like way ahead of Norris, and Norris has, for this year at least, has similar potential.
Yeah. Brett, I have a feeling you're gonna go with Zach Davies here, but who's the guy for you that you like?
I mean, I could go with Davies if you want.
I like him, but, too.
What?
I like him, too. Didn't you draft him in labor?
I did.
Yeah, he's good.
I'm actually going to give a little bit of love to a different guy that I drafted in labor, and I'm going to talk about why I'm watching Jordan Zimmerman pretty closely this spring. You know, last year his whole season was kind of thrown off the rails with his neck injury, and if that is behind him, and his stuff looks more crisp, and reports so far have been good, but it's February, so everyone's reports should be good. He's someone who I could see returning to sort of safe third starter status, even with that defense, and even with what's what probably be somewhat limited strikeouts, even in the full workload. I don't see him getting more than about 160 strikeouts, but there is still more in there than I think people are assuming. I think he could still be a really solid source of whip. And he's only 30 years old. He's not that old yet. So don't give up on him.
All right. Anybody else in this tier that you guys want to shout out right now, or can we move on?
I mean, I mentioned Garcia in the article, so you can kind of refer to that. The other guy intrigues me a little bit just because of Pittsburgh and what he did in Pittsburgh is Ivan Nova. I think we're always inclined to discount like what pitchers do over a short period of time, but as we saw with Jay Happ last year, I think Nova could sustain a fair amount of what he did with the Pirates.
People scoffed at him in the offseason when he was a free agent, and there's a reason the Pirates wanted him back. Like, they think he can be effective. Brett, is there anybody for you? Because I have one guy that I kind of like, but go ahead.
The only guy who I will mention very briefly is John Gray.
Damn it. That's who I was going to pick. Go ahead.
he is a pitcher at Coors, which is never great, but, he actually was better at home than he was on the road last year. And I think there is potential for him to get even better. I mean, at home last year, he had a 4.3 ERA, 1.12 WHIP, and 94 strikeouts in 84 innings. So with a reasonable road showing this year, I think even with Coors, he could be not an impact starter, but I think he could be what people want Robbie Ray to be, which is a good pitcher.
So John Gray last year had 29 starts. He had 7 starts in which he gave up 5 or more earned runs. So like the ERA is a little bit skewed. Like, I think if he can avoid some of these disaster outings, like there are game logs on here. Like, if you just look at it, like 3 innings, 9 earned runs, like, man, if he can avoid those just absolute disaster outings, like, he could be pretty good.
The thing I'll point out about Gray on the road is he did earn it. Like, he had a 4.05 FIP on the road compared to a 3.16 at home, and that was the command. He walked over 4/9 on the road. If he fixes that, I do agree, and there's some law of averages going on at home with him, and I'm not as high on Gray as you guys are. But I do agree there's a little more here than just your usual Rockies pitcher to avoid. He could be useful in anything but a vanilla mixer.
Yeah, like if anyone has the stuff to tame Coors Field, like it's this guy. Like he could do it. So I'm intrigued. I want to see what happens. All right, it's time for everyone's favorite game, the one-star tier. I actually love a bunch of guys in the one-star. Like there are some fascinating names here. So Brett, I think you went first last week, so Mike, you are up. Who are you taking out of the 23 names in the one-star tier?
Jesus.
There's so many
options. I'm not as interested in a lot of these guys as you are.
Oh my god! Come on.
It's a one-star tier. It's just not really the best place to go shopping. But you know, we had people. I'll steal your boy that you wrote about, George. You can be annoyed with me. You know, if he's healthy, Garrett Richards is going to be a very good pitcher. The question with him is health. And I do feel that some, including Richards, you know, himself, and I get it, players have to say this, is overly optimistic about. I've heard 200 innings attached to him, and
no.
I just don't see that happening. But 140, 150 innings of Richards, even if he only puts up like a 3-2, that's pretty good. And you know, the other side of it is, you know, we know with this treatment that he got that it might not work, and he could just wind up not pitching. Everyone's pointing to Masahiro Tanaka as, you know, it worked for him, but there's been a lot of failure and backsliding with this as well. So that's why I have him here in the one-star tier. I just don't have the best feeling about his health. But in terms of the stuff, if he can go out there every day, if he can pitch, I think he got a bargain here.
Yeah, I mean, he had the surgery he had was – what did he have? I think he had PRP. Yeah, a platelet rich.
It's the PRP treatments. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know. We know Garrett Richards is talented, and apparently the Angels feel like he's good to go. So they're going to put him out there, and, you know, I'd pay for 150 innings. I don't know about anything more than that right now. But, yeah, Brett, who are you taking in this tier?
Oh, yeah, I think you guys both know who I'm taking, and it's not even close.
Oh, Frankie.
I'm taking Francisco Liriano. This value is just perfect for him, because God knows what you're ever going to get out of Francisco Liriano, but if you are going to gamble on him when he only costs a late round pick, and gamble on him in Toronto. I mean, you know, we've talked about this before. He was excellent after being shipped from Pittsburgh to Toronto. You know, he was sort of vintage Liriano, at least vintage later career Liriano, not sort of early Minnesota Twins days Liriano. But there, you know, Toronto has been an underrated place for people to really make vast improvements in their pitching. You know, we saw Aaron Sanchez this year. We've seen it with Jay Happ. You know, and Liriano, frankly, has better stuff than certainly has better stuff than Happ. But you know, he's got almost comparable stuff to Sanchez. If he can keep that progress going, there's no reason why Liriano can't do what people were expecting him to do going into 2016, which is be sort of a, you know, risky second or third starter, someone who probably ends up disappointing but strikes out enough guys to keep you interested.
Yeah. I love Frankie this year. He costs nothing. It's really great. So there are a couple names for me, like Matt Shoemaker and Lance Lynn. Lynn coming off Tommy John, I think. Not a huge innings number, but I think he could be pretty good. I've written about Jarrell Cotton a lot. I think he maybe is getting too much hype, and he's not exactly going to be, you know, a dollar guy in a mixed league at this point. So he's a little risky to me. The guy I'm going to take is Steven Wright. And have you guys noticed this, that Boston's rotation is pretty much all left-handed pitchers? They don't have, like, a right-hander. They traded Clay Buchholz. It's, like, six lefties and Steven Wright. So,
well, they have Porcello.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Rick. But, yeah, so they have one righty and then all lefties.
You forgot about the Cy Young winner. You can edit this out if you want, but that's well. No, it is funny to say that, because like nobody's talking about Porcello, and I mean, I get it. He's not going to do what he did last year. Well, he is sort of this year's Keuchel, where it's that question of, you know, can he do it again? And nobody knows.
Yeah, like, can I be honest? Like, all the people I live in New England, so all anyone talks about is Chris Sale right now, and David Price and that whole dynamic, and like people on the streets talk about Chris Sale, like, because he's kind of a, you know, an interesting character. Like, it's easy to forget about Rick Porcello, but like Stephen Wright, to me, he was really good until he messed up his shoulder when he, for some reason that still is unclear, had to go in and pinch run in a game and dove back to the second base and messed up his throwing shoulder. So it's one of those things. Like, he was one of the, he was really good in the first half of the year. He made the All-Star team. Like, I think if he's right, and you're going to know pretty quickly in spring training, like, I don't see how he's a bad play for like a dollar. Stephen Wright to me. So I don't know. Anybody else that we have not talked about today? Because we did a lot, guys. This was good.
This is pitchers and starters. Next week we'll talk about relievers for 10 minutes, and then we'll talk about my labor auction.
That is true.
Yes.
Unless you want to talk more about relievers, we certainly can. George, don't ask for questions about relievers.
No, I won't. I don't want to talk about relievers. Just drive.
I'd much rather talk about labor.
I did take your boy Carter Capps in a mock NL only, so I thought that'd make you happy.
Hashtag pray for Carter's elbow. Seriously, though, you should. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 121 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been the Baseball Prospectus and Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us and the entire BP Fantasy team on baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for super premium membership. You get access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Brett is at BrettSayerBP. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And I am at George Bissell. That's two S's and two L's. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. We are one of the top 10 fantasy baseball podcasts right now on iTunes. I am thrilled about it. So we would love it if you left us a rating and a review. If you take a screenshot of it and you send it to us on Twitter, we will answer any question you want on next week's show. We're going to do a listener request show. Probably instead of talking about relievers, because I don't want to talk about relievers. It's just not that exciting. And Mike, you don't want to talk about relievers, right?
I really don't. And you know, George always solicit questions. I mean, if you guys have questions, we'll answer them. But you know the deal with saves. Like, outside of like a handful of closers, like three or four of them, any of them could fail. That's just the deal with closers.
I might just talk about Kyle Bearclaw and Carter Capps the whole 10 minutes.
One in four closers every year will fail. Like, we know that that's about the rate. Like, so there's seven or eight closers who are closers now that by the end of the year won't be. And sometimes they're not guys that we think they are. Like, sometimes they're guys in that middle where it's like, okay, Cody Allen failed, for example. And, you know, I know he's got a great guy behind him. But, like, no one will be surprised if, like, if Roberto Osuna, for example, if he fails, if you say in October he's not the closer, I'd be like, oh, okay, like that's a little weird because he's really good, but I wouldn't be shocked the way if like some hitter, you know, like who was like a $20 hitter, you said he's, you know, he did nothing, you'd be like, what? Like, you just don't have the reaction with closers.
Hey, Mike, guess what?
What?
We just did the reliever podcast. Congratulations.
I was about to say.
It's done.
That's a reliever podcast. We'll just talk about labor next week. And Brett, you're off the hook if you're listening, which I don't know if you listen to our show or not. A little secret to our listeners, I almost never listen to our show because I have to hear myself do it. So I typically don't listen to it.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be weird to listen to your own show. If you do a podcast, let us know, because I don't.
Well, at the very beginning, when I first started doing it, I listened to kind of hear what I sound like, and there were more. And if you go, please don't go back and listen to the old episodes.
Please do.
This isn't a production thing. Mal did fine, but like I there were more ums and ahs and pauses, and I think that I still dropped those in a little bit, but. it was much rawer than it is now. And I could still be better, but I know from listening and going through hearing the mistakes I made, like, that I don't make them nearly as much.
All right, so here's all you need to know about saves. Fernando Rodney is still getting saves. It doesn't make any sense, and we're not going to really talk about it. So we're excited. We're going to do labor next week. Mike's going out to Phoenix for the draft, so that's going to be cool, getting to hang with everybody and draft. So
I'll see a friend of the show, Steve Gardner, and I think we'll have – I'll talk to him when I'm out there. We'll probably have him on to talk about labor, because that's always a great – thing when he comes on. And you know, how I think about it, like, F relievers, you know, we'll have me talk about labor for 20 or 30 minutes. We'll bring Steve on if he has the time, and he usually does, to talk about labor for 20 or 30 minutes, and that'll be the show. And if you guys want to hear my thoughts on Genmar Gomez, come find me in beautiful Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And if you can, actually, please don't do that, but you know, just don't.
Yeah, so I love Steve. He's really great. So that'd be awesome if we could get him for next week. So, hey, everybody, stay tuned. Follow us on Twitter for updates. We'll let you know what's going on. But
this got really long at the end, but that's okay.
Yeah, but we've never used the whole song to do an outro before, so that's maybe this will do it. Very excited to find out. That's why I've been dragging this out. I want to see if we can actually do it for the first time ever.
Pass the song?
Yeah, exactly. So for Mike Gianella and Brett Sayer, it's George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Hopefully the song's ending right now. So long, everybody.
Bye.